Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Science Faction, the only show where a scientist, a comedian, and a comedian scientist come together to discuss science comedically.
Hello, and welcome to Science Faction 600! Science Faction, fast-moving HIV and the chocolate poison.
Okay, Bobby, 600 episodes. What are some of the special guests we got dropping in?
Well, first, there is comedian Robert Timothy. With him will also be archaeologist Robert Timothy, science educator Robert Timothy.
I hate each one of those guys more than the next one.
And Vons Club member, Mr. Damian Mercado.
Revoked former Vons Club member.
I think that's too localized a joke to Southern California. Maybe Safeway or a Kroger's, that might...
Albertsons. Albertsons is the parent company that is the second largest grocer in the United States under Kroger. I know that because I was formerly a Vons employee.
That's how you got kicked out of the Vons Club.
Yeah, they, like if you put in my number, like security alarm goes off, the store goes on lockdown, and they send their kill team to the store.
This is nothing like the Mickey Mouse Club.
So yeah, go to Kroger's. If you're in Southern California, Ralph's would be like a Kroger.
Oh, dear. Well, I kind of did the intros there impromptu, so just a reminder.
And we haven't gotten a cent from Kroger. I don't think Vons or Albertsons is going to give us money at this point after what we said. But
it is funny when you don't grow up around the name of a store and then you just hear it. Like, when I was like 21 for the first time, somebody in college used the word Hardee's, and I was like, what the fuck is a Hardee's? And they're like, you know, like they got the star, like, you know, like Hardee's. Like, it's blah, blah, blah. And I realized that that's what Carl's Jr. is called in like horrible places. And so like
it's so true. It's so America. That is one of the divides. Are you in Carl's Jr. country or are you in Hardee's country?
Well, it's actually east west, I think. I think it's like east of the Mississippi or whatever. I'm not sure what it is. When you hear the name of a store that you didn't grow up around, it sounds weird. Like Kroger's? That's the name of a that sounds like a disease where, like, a wart grows on top of another wart. Like, what, a Kroger?
Piggly Wiggly? That was a
thing?
Yeah. Which is fun. I kind of like Piggly Wiggly.
I can go with Piggly Wiggly. But, like, yeah, just every once in a while you get, like, a store name that, like, for a while there was a big thing in one of the Trump stories about how he went to a pharmacy, and I guess there's a very common pharmacy there called the Duane Reade. And they just kept talking about, like, the Duane Reade. And I'm like, what the is that a memorial library? Like, what the fuck are you talking about?
They're in New York, too, so it makes me feel like the bumpkin now. Like, they have Duane Reade's in New York, so, like, what the fuck are we? We have our CVS.
And just a reminder, if you want to get extra episode of Science Faction every single week with 4 extra science news articles, go ahead and check our Patreon. Search Patreon for Robert Timothy. Go ahead and check that out and start listening to our I Call BS episodes. But for now, let's move right on to science articles.
From molecules to particles, this is Science Articles.
And if you like the humor of this show, you think I'm funny, you think Bobby's funny, check out my Dungeons & Dragons podcast, Awful Neutral. We don't just play that. We play Hellfraiser. We play a lot of other tabletop games. I recently, Bobby, you might be interested in this.
Doubt it.
We recently got from a longtime fan, reached out and said he never thought that he would listen to a Dungeons & Dragons podcast.
And never should have.
But he thinks it's funny. And also, he wants you to be on the show real bad. And I don't have the heart to break it to him that, like,
no.
I would have to design a trap that would essentially, you'd have to sacrifice a child to get out of it.
It would be my version of Saw. I have a needle phobia, and there's one of the Saws, they had a scene where there was just a concrete pit filled with hypodermic needles that a guy had to jump into. And I didn't sleep for a week after seeing that scene. And I still feel a little bit better about the hypodermic needles, to be honest with you.
I swear to God, like, why can't you hit, like, a nerdy gypsy or something and, like you, like, constantly pee 20-sided dice?
Nerdier.
You have kidney stones. You just are constantly passing plastic dodecahedrons through your urethra.
Oh, dear. Article number 1, forget the new strain of COVID. Catching the latest HIV is what's in vogue.
COVID is so 2021. HIV is all the rage in Milan right now.
No, really, it's an outbreak. It's terrible. Please help him along.
So this is really, really interesting. So this is a very interesting and still developing story, but a new variant of HIV has been discovered in the Netherlands, and it seems to be more transmissible than the standard variants and turns into AIDS more quickly when left untreated. It's referred to as VB, or a variant of HIV-1. Now, before we get into everything, and I'm going to talk about why this is so cool and what's going on and how we figured this out, I'm going to talk about all of that. I want to refresh everybody's memory, because I had to refresh my own, and I actually write this show, about HIV and the different HIVs. Now, Damien, do you remember, we talked a little bit about different HIVs about, I don't know, 200 episodes ago. Do you remember anything about it? Give your precursor knowledge.
No. I'm usually pretty good about holding on to some cursory member part of an article, but I got nothing here, which tells me there must have been some real low-hanging fruit comedically on this
didn't
article,
have to think
and
about
I,
it.
That's, I seized on that.
Well, HIV-1, also known as the Big Dick HIV strain.
God, I would have remembered that. No, bullshit.
Okay, most of the HIV on Earth, and you can almost say all of it, but most of the HIV on Earth in humans is HIV-1. And there are three strains that we know of, possibly four, of HIV-1, labeled with the letters strain M, strain N, strain O, and strain P. And what's interesting is, each of these seem to be a separate crossover into the human population, meaning that these aren't branching things like, you know, we talk about COVID. Oh, Omicron popped up within a patient because they were receiving treatment for being immune.
Getting rimmed on a fucking Friday night just trying to, you know, relax at their job. Yeah, I got you.
Yeah, so that's not what we're talking about. What we're talking about is four separate instances in which SIV, simian immunodeficiency virus, jumped over into human beings. Now, the main one that affects most of the people on Earth is strain M. That is, you could just think of it as the main strain. And that was the OG strain. It was the original strain that crossed over somewhere in the Congo in the 1920s and basically is responsible for all HIV seen before about 1960.
Okay, so that's the old one. What's the one, what HIV do we get here? Is it more of an in vogue, newer, you know, not your granddaddy's HIV?
So HIV-1 makes up the vast majority of HIV infections, and HIV-1-M makes up the vast majority of HIV-1 infections. So almost everybody who has HIV that we're talking about outside of Africa has HIV-1 version M. And again, that's 90% of HIV-1 cases. And again, all of the ones before 1960s. Then there's N, and that one was discovered in a single Cameroonian woman in 1995, and it's now known to have infected about 20 people, all told. So, again, not very big numbers. Then there's O, which has infected about 100,000 people in almost all in West Central Africa, and not much outside of there. And this one is interesting because O is believed to have been caught from gorillas as opposed to chimpanzees. And then P, which is known from a single Cameroonian woman in 2004. Remember, this is the one that might be one. Known from a single Cameroonian woman in 2004, and also they believe to come from gorillas. So the first two, M and N, from chimps, then O and P from gorillas. Now, HIV-2 is kind of interesting. It's less transmissible. It's mostly in Africa, but there are some versions throughout the world that get out of Africa, but it's still mostly in Africa. And it comes from a different primate altogether. We're not even talking about one of the great apes. It comes from a primate called a Sudimangabe, which sounds like an insult from Harry Potter.
Yeah, that's that, or like I'm listening to a racial slur in another language. Like my racism detector went up. That sounds hateful.
Now, there are 8 strains of HIV-2, but the killer here is that 6 of those 8 strains could not be human-to-human transmissible, or we don't think they were. So they basically, like, one or two people got infected from a Sudimangabe, and then those guys died, but it never went anywhere. So, like, the entire history of infection of some of these strains are one or two people. But 2 of the 8 are transmissible between people and has spread somewhat throughout the world, though not nearly on the scale of HIV-1.
Yeah, that primate sounds like when I'm trying to talk offensively Australian. Donga wonga ba. Sunga nunga baby.
Sudi mangabe.
So Sudi mangabe. like something like Crocodile Dundee would punch me if I said that in front of him.
So this is a version of HIV-1 of the main strain, the M strain. And what they found is kind of interesting. So this came from a study, like a genetic study of the HIV strains in the Netherlands. And when they were doing it, all of a sudden something popped out where they noticed that a few people had this different strain. And when they looked at it, they realized that it acts very differently. It progresses much more quickly into AIDS. It seems to be much more infectious. When they looked at it, they found that the variant's viral particles in human blood are present at 3.5 to 5.5 times, not percent, times the amount seen in the normal variant. So we're talking about a significant increase in the amount of actual virus in the blood at any given time. Maybe that's why it's, you know, moving so quickly and more transmissible.
Well, that makes sense. I mean, we've talked on this show about how actually transmissible the HIV that
yes,
we think
of. Yes, we're going to talk about
HIV
that in a second.
Is.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, this is like the difference between like Omicron,
yeah,
versus Delta.
Very, very interesting just in that part alone. The immune system of people with it fell twice as fast as the normal strain when not medicated, though the strain of virus does respond to the antiretrovirals just the same as the normal strain. So as long as you're being medicated, it's fine.
They have socialized medicine in the country so that's good. You know, if this
yeah,
was
that's true.
In Africa,
that's true.
They have a much higher death toll.
Yeah, so. Or as we talked about before, Cleveland.
Steamy Cleveland.
And yeah, it is much more transmissible. The drugs still work, but you have to get those drugs more quickly because it progresses more quickly. And the variant has numerous mutations from a typical strain, meaning we don't actually know what about it makes it more transmissible and fast moving. There are so many mutations, we haven't actually figured out which of those are the important ones that is making it more fast moving, more transmissible. So let me tell you how they found it. Here's a quote from the Science Daily article. The VB variant was first identified in 17 HIV positive individuals from the Beehive Project, an ongoing study which collects samples from across Europe and Uganda. Since 15 of these people came from the Netherlands, the researchers then analyzed the data from a cohort of over 6,700 HIV-positive individuals in the Netherlands. This identified an additional 92 individuals with the variant from all regions of the Netherlands, bringing the total to 109. By analyzing the patterns of genetic variation among these samples, the researchers estimate that the VB variant first arose... I'm going to pause right there. Damien, when do you think this HIV variant arose, this much more transmissible, much more fast-moving variant that has 109 infections in one country in the world? When do you think it arose?
I think the World Cup was in the Netherlands, like somewhere in the last decade. I'm going to say that.
Okay,
bam.
That's racist. Okay.
Oh, no. They're going to take this episode off Spotify because of my Netherlands joke.
No, liking soccer. This is a family-friendly show, Damien. Don't talk about that kind of stuff.
Unless there's an adult there to explain soccer to the kids so that they understand that what they're hearing is wrong.
Oh, dear. So they estimate that the VB variant first arose in the late 1980s and 1990s in the Netherlands.
Okay, fall the Berlin Wall. Okay.
Well, nowhere near there. But no, listen to this, though. Think about this. We're talking about Omicron becoming much more easy to spread and dominating the world stage in like 3 weeks from the moment that we think it kind of like emerged into the human population. We're saying here there is a much more transmissible form of HIV. And it mutated and came into existence somewhere around the late 80s, and close to 109 people have been infected by it. Think how little that actually means. Now, obviously, that sucks for those people, and hopefully they're all on medication and blah, 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 blah. But this is the difference. This is the difference between a respiratory infection and a, frankly, much harder to get sexually transmitted infection. You can see we don't bang as many people as we share air with, and it's not nearly as transmissible even if we did. And we end up in situations where a much more transmissible version of a virus that was released 35 years ago is now in 109 people.
I think like mainly it was because of one courageous guy who, when he got it, in order to help prevent the spread of it, he got his dick stuck, much as a Netherlands tradition, in a fleshlight. And it was very difficult for him to spread the disease at that point. He called for help to prevent all of the Netherlands being flooded with HIV. God damn it. I was trying to think of a finger in the hole.
Yes, of course.
In the dike.
Yes.
Joke.
So this brings up like an interesting point that, as Damien has said, we have mentioned on this show before, which is the fact that, and we don't discuss this nearly enough. This is kind of the missing piece to, wait, how the fuck can something be much more transmissible, be around for 35 years, and has affected 109 people? How is that fucking possible? How can you even tell it's more transmissible? Well, the fact of the matter is, and this was something I was flat out lied to as a child, HIV is actually fairly difficult to get through most types of casual sexual encounters, even if they are unprotected. Now, this sounds bad. I don't want you to not use protection because, A, there's a bunch of other STDs you can get that are also very, very bad, but also you don't want to take that chance no matter how low it is when you just wear a condom. So don't think this is me saying not wear a condom. You should absolutely wear a condom, if for no other reason than it's a great birth control method too. So just wear a condom. But
not catching HIV should, in this day and age, be the least of your concern, but it still should be a concern. But yeah, I mean, I'd be way more worried about catching herpes. Wear the condom.
Yes. So. Now, I remember asking this exact question in my fifth grade health class, and I had one of these little, like, school marmy old teacher ladies who just, like, hated children and didn't want to be there and also just gave out horrible advice, and some idiot made her the health teacher. And she was given the HIV lesson. I remember asking, being a young statistic nerd, I was like, okay, well, what's, like, how many people who are exposed to it get it? Like, if you have sex with a person who has HIV, what are the chances you're getting? Well, like, she's like, well, if you're not wearing a condom, it's 100%. You're going to get it. And I was like, oh, wow. And I remember even thinking that as a kid, like, that doesn't seem right. Like,
even from a finger diddle?
Like, kids come to school with colds. And even, like, even then, we're all trapped in the same room together for 8 hours. And, like, we don't all get, even then, it's like, three kids get away with that. Are you telling me 100%? I remember thinking it was dumb. And then, eventually, when I actually found the number, I want to go back and yell at this woman. Eventually, when I finally found the number, I realized it's like, it's actually pretty unlikely in general. So let's talk about the actual...
Well, depending upon the route.
Yes.
The route that the HIV, you know, if it's intravenous, that's pretty high.
Yeah, so...
If you take your HIV like a frat bro and soak it in a tampon...
That's right.
Like vodka... Yeah. And insert it anally, yeah. That's a decently high transmission.
So let's go over the different things. So, Damien, what do you think is the activity that is most likely for you to catch HIV from somebody else? Any activity.
I'm going to say sharing needles, number one.
No.
Alex, on the board. Okay, then butt stuff. Has to be butt stuff.
Nope. Well, I mean, I guess it kind of depends.
Cerebral spinal fluid transfer?
To be fair, it depends how you do it. It is a blood transfusion with contaminated blood. So if you get a blood transfusion with HIV-contaminated blood, your chances of getting HIV are 9 out of 10. So that is the most likely occurrence that you can have in which you are going to catch HIV in a one-time interaction.
Well, that makes sense. I'm taking a bag of infected blood and shooting it in you.
Yeah,
yeah, that makes perfect sense.
I actually thought it'd be
okay.
Way higher. That means 1 out of 10 people who you shove a bag of HIV blood and just walk with it.
Yeah, hey, HIV, you know, we were taught to believe this thing was a monster. This thing's kind of a little pussycat.
All right, Damien, what do you think this...
Of course, it's also killed a lot of people.
What do you think the second interaction that is the interaction that is the second most likely to get you infected?
You know what? I know my first answer before was intravenous drug use. I now learn that blood sucks.
Yes.
I've been told, it has been drilled into me, that there's a lot of HIV in semen. It's all about how you get it there, though. I'm going to say butt stuff.
No. Number two is childbirth. Childbirth
wow.
Transmission, if you aren't on suppressive drug and you're not doing any kind of thing to mitigate it, is 1 out of 4. The mother will pass it on to the baby.
I just really want to say butt stuff and get it right. So I've been fooled twice. It makes sense. These are two things that make perfect sense.
Damien, what do you think the third activity that is most likely to get you infected doing it one time, what do you think it is?
I've been fooled twice before. It's not going to happen again. Sharing a toilet seat.
Sorry, Damien, you Victorian school marm. It's butt stuff. Jeez, why don't you go back and teach my fifth grade health class if you don't want to talk about the hard topics?
Hello, class. 100% from vaginal sex, I say, as Bobby's teacher.
Damien, what do you think the chances of being the recipient of unprotected anal sex, what do you think the chances of you catching HIV from an HIV positive partner?
I'm gonna say, we actually learned this, but ballpark, I'm gonna say like 1 in 90 from anal sex.
Close.
1 time in 90.
Close. 1 out of 72.
Okay, but even so, that's
yeah.
I mean, you could.
You could get away with one dirty anal sex without a condom a week. For almost a year, you'd be good. Yeah, I mean, statistically, at some point, you get to the point where it's more likely to have happened with the 1 in 72 odds. But still,
or you could just be a top. But like, let's just say you're craving, you're a bottom, and you know, you're dirty bottom. You love
yeah.
it. You're right. It is not like I always grew up thinking it was a death sentence. But like 1 in 72, not bad.
How about this? What do you think the likelihood of the next most common one, injection with contaminated needles? So you are using HIV-positive person's intravenous needles to use drugs, specifically drugs. What do you think the chances are?
1 in 120.
Close. 1 in 158.
I mean, I don't think I'd get it right on my exam.
Now, how about this? How about this, Damien? What if you were the unprotected giver of anal sex? So the recipient has HIV. You are the giver. You are not using a condom. What are the chances that you are going to catch HIV from that person?
Wow. I mean, like, because I'd have to, like...
Just a reminder, recipient was 1 in 72.
But giver, I mean, I'm trying to think of, like, the route of transmission. I'd have to be taking in feces through my urethra. That or
again,
that or all the track marks on my penis. I don't know how much HIV is in feces. I'm gonna say 1 in 250, Alex.
1 in 909.
Not even close. But
isn't
but I like
that crazy?
That. I
mean, that's very very unlikely. Here's this: man to woman unprotected vaginal sex. So the man has HIV. He's having unprotected vaginal sex with a woman. Now, there are some caveats to this. You know, this would not apply to, like, sexual assaults and stuff because there's not lubrication and things like that. But normal man to woman.
Dude's a big shooter.
Yeah, unprotected.
Like, that could be a...
Vaginal sex. 1 in 1,234. Eat that, Mrs. Coon. 100%. 1 in 1,234. And by the way, I was asking, which would have actually been the other way, which would have been a woman to a man unprotected vaginal sex, which is actually, Damien, you want to take a guess at that one?
1 in 1,000. No, because that, no. I'm going to say 1 in 3,000.
1 in 2,380. Oh my God, who were they letting teach health class in the 90s?
And when I think about all the sex I didn't have because of AIDS propaganda.
I know. How about this?
Which is no sex because, I mean, let's be honest, yes. I was not.
but it ruined a lot of fantasies. I had to start pulling out a condom every time I was, my fantasy guy had to pull out a condom because he had to be safe even in fantasies.
Well, I think of, like, some, you know, if anything, it makes me feel more vindicated, though, because, like, you know, there have been a lot of times where I went home with somebody
right. From
the bar who some people might have considered dirty or something.
Yeah.
But I was like, hey, you know what? I'm not saying I didn't catch something else, but you know what I didn't catch statistically? And I'd like to point to the data. AIDS.
You know what I did get? And it was unfortunate. Mange.
Funny story. I did get scabies once from a girl. She just had this, I guess, dirty ass bed. got me. And by the way, like, that's a weird STD to diagnose because it's, like, mainly, like, on your wrists and, like, ankles and shit. And, like, it comes in bumps. And so, like, you're in the military, you're going to the doctor, like, what is the problem? And they're like, well, they give you more cream until, like, finally, like, somebody's like, that's scabies, dude.
Oh dear. By the way, receiving fellatio unprotected, they're not even sure if it's possible to transmit. So there's a possibility it's actually 0% chance, but if it is, it's somewhere in the range of 1 out of 2,500 or smaller likelihood. You can basically get a BJ every day for most of your adult life and be totally fine.
You sound like one of those doctors from one of those socialized medicine countries. Like, yes, we all, you know, I'm an American. I would love it if my doctor would write me a prescription for therapeutic blowjobs. But I don't live in the Netherlands.
But I mean, this is what's crazy. These numbers are mind-blowing, right? And it shows you how difficult it is to actually contract HIV in most situations. And so it kind of gives you some reflection on how, if something is way more infectious, how it's still going to be spreading incredibly slowly in this STD context versus in a COVID-type context where, you know, decades later, we have 109 people infected by this disease. That's much, much, much more transmissible than the original variant.
You know, there is a tragedy because, you know, it's no secret AIDS ravaged the gay community in America.
Right.
And I always thought, like, you know, that is obviously a fucking tragedy. But learning these numbers, I'm like, you know what? You know, a lot of these people pass, but they had a lot more fun than I thought they did, you know, like,
wow.
Statistically.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, you know, it wasn't in vain. Like, No. It wasn't like, you know, it just, I went to the club one night and this happened. No, you probably had an awesome life.
Well, except for the fact that the most likely way to get it was blood transfusion. So there was a lot of people who just, like, went to the hospital. They were the most likely to get it.
Yeah, the kid who was in a car accident and had to be fucking.
All right, article number 2, in search of the chocolate poison.
You sound like my Chocoholics Anonymous sponsor. Damien, chocolate's poison. I don't have a problem. I can quit eating chocolate anytime I want, Bobby.
Did you know that chocolate has a poison problem, Damien?
For dogs, yes.
Those who identify as dogs?
I'm a furry. I don't eat dark chocolate because of it.
What if you were a furry and you were so committed that if you accidentally ate chocolate while in your furry costume, you had to kill yourself?
I break the cyanide tablet.
Yeah.
Break in case of chocolate.
Yeah. This is what
happens when like ex-Russian FSB agents become furries.
Oh, I thought like Daniel, this is how Daniel Day-Lewis died. He had to one-up yes. David Carradine. He became the furry.
Dear. Chocolate does have a poison problem, specifically has a heavy metal problem.
Badass, brother. Love it.
In this case, cadmium.
Cadmium, if correct me if I'm wrong, isn't that one radioactive?
No, it's what the inside of a Cadbury cream egg is.
Then I don't see the problem, Bobby.
It's just it's solid cadmium.
It's a white and yellow yolk, sugary yolk substance.
It's a shiny metal, but the problem is similar to lead and other heavy metals. It fucks up our bodies because our body takes it in thinking it's something else, usually a calcium, and then binds it in, and then we get fucked up from it. In this case, it messes up our kidneys, it can mess up our lungs, it can mess up a bunch of stuff. And unless you're a smoker, which is the biggest way you get cadmium, your biggest cadmium contribution into your body is from chocolate. And this has been true for a very long time because chocolate has an increasing cadmium problem.
We are breeding the wrong types of chocolate. We think we'd want to breed the ones with less cadmium. You're saying cadmium is a secret to its deliciousness?
Well, this researcher for this paper was actually looking into it because they don't actually have a full scale of understanding of what exactly is going on and why this is there and why it's getting worse. And it turns out there's a bunch of reasons. One, there's a lot of these we kind of knew already, but he put everything together and figured out. Number one is a lot of chocolate or a lot of cacao is grown in the southern hemisphere or sometimes along the equator. And those areas tend to have a lot more cadmium in the dirt, just naturally. It's more of a naturally occurring mineral in those areas. The problem then becomes pH too, where if the pH is too high, that cadmium then gets absorbed through the cacao beans and becomes part of the bean. Now, we can't remove the cadmium from the soil. I've done like heavy metal remediation before. It's a huge deal. It's insanely expensive. If you were to try to remediate like a 10 by 10 square of dirt, it's many, many thousands of dollars, much less a bunch of farms in a very, very poor place in the third world. There is no way we would have the cash to do heavy metal remediation on farms throughout, you know, South America and stuff. It's just not going
to
happen.
Is it just because it's that expensive to build the magnet?
Yes, that's exactly how they do it.
Like a Wile E. Coyote-esque.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking more of an Ocean's 11, but I guess they could just do it in the daylight, huh? This really isn't illegal.
Yeah. I'm picturing like it being plowed behind a horse just going through the dirt. A llama.
So what the researcher found, though, is that even if that cadmium is there, it's not going to be uptaken if the pH of the soil kind of goes down a bunch. And so their solution was to distribute lime around, which can be added pretty cheaply and easily to fields. And you'd still have the cadmium there. You still have a little bit of cadmium uptake, but the pH would keep it from becoming an increasing problem. And you might go like, well, wait, where does cadmium come from? It's naturally occurring and it occurs, you know, as a natural mineral, but it can also occur as like buildup from certain fertilizer usage. And so what ends up happening is you have these fields and they use fertilizers and they already have high cadmium in the soil. There's just a little bit of cadmium left over every time they use the fertilizer. So more and more builds up. Heavy metals accumulate, as we all know. They tend to not really go anywhere. And so they end up becoming a problem if it gets uptaken in the beans like that. And it's not going to really hurt your average person. We don't really eat enough chocolate, especially in a lot of places like the U.S. where we are. We eat a lot of milk chocolate, which doesn't have enough cacao in it to even really contribute a lot of cadmium. You'd have to eat a lot of like dark chocolate for it to be a thing. So it's not necessarily something you need to necessarily worry about unless you are, I don't know, Count Chocula? Like who is it that drinks, who would have enough chocolate for the cadmium issue to be a problem?
I don't know. I really like your Count Chocula analogy. Years from now, his death, his hair is falling out. Blah, I've lost another thing of hair. What is happening? Count Chocula, I don't know how to tell you this. You have a chocoglastoma. And...
anyway, very, very interesting because it does. It's like one of those things we talked about. It's not as easy as like the cow seaweed methane solution. And it's still going to be still a big deal and would take a lot of work and money and everything. But at least it is a solution and could feasibly be done as opposed to how do we just remove all the cadmium from the soil and half of the earth.
Turns out vampires are also weak to cancer.
But if you do get it, if you do have so much chocolate that you start having problem with your kidneys, bones, and lungs, just, I don't know, back off?
I can't die. I know hell is real, and I'm certainly going there. Oh, Lord.
All right. Thank you, audience, for coming back for Science Faction 600, where you learned all about the latest strain of HIV and how to fix the world's chocolate poison problem. Thank you so much for joining us, and come on back next week for Science Faction 601.
I must repent for my sins. Dear Flying Spaghetti Monster, let me into Big Titty Heaven.
You've been listening to Science Faction. Wait, that's not right.